Hello and welcome to the Dream Freedom Beauty Podcast. I'm your hostess, Natalie Ross, and this week's guest is Hope Cross December, and I'm really excited to bring this to you. I've been following her on Instagram and following her and her husband's story as she takes care of him. He has ALS, and yeah, this is, I really loved getting to talk with her and how she's just willing to just be real. And I just wanted to let you all know that the Self-Care Club membership and community is opening its doors. So while we have the Self-Care Club podcast, it's free to listen to, then there will be this membership you can join and have get that connection and community with our live online gatherings where we will have special guests and we'll get to have discussions and workshops and get to really hang out online in a space that is made just for people like us to connect with each other on a deeper level than just Instagram, or, you know, on a deeper level than you just listening to me in your ears like this. We actually get to engage and talk and connect. It's exciting. And that's going to be happening. Our first gathering is going to be February 13th, and the doors will be opening about a week before that for you to be able to sign up. So stay tuned. Hop on one of the mailing lists, dreamfreedombeauty.com or selfcareclub.net, and just come join the fun, and I'll see you there. Thank you all so much. Hey, everybody. I want to take a quick break and chat with Laura Lee about some healing work she did with Rebecca Conran, who has been a guest on the show in episodes 38 and episode 78, and who also does our energy reports. And so I just wanted to check in with Laura Lee real quick and ask her a couple questions about her experiences working with Rebecca. Hi, Laura Lee.
Hi, Natalie.
So what prompted you to seek help from Rebecca? What were you thinking and feeling?
Well, originally I was feeling depleted from working with many clients as a body worker and energy healer myself, and reached out to Rebecca for support, to support me in my own healing and also to support me in how I was supporting others. And yeah. I think we all have blind spots, no matter who it is. And it's very important as a practitioner to receive regular, ongoing work from others.
Right. Yeah. How are you going to be able to give your best work if you're not getting the support you need to be clear and whole and aligned and just have your cup full?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So what was your experience like working with Rebecca? How does it feel to actually be there with her? Or actually, do you do it in person or do you talk over Skype?
Well, I have worked with Rebecca in person, but I've also worked with her perhaps more so remotely on the phone. And I find it to be equally as powerful and no different than in person. Rebecca really is incredibly kind and compassionate, and her energy work is very, very strong. She's incredibly intuitive, one of the most intuitive healers that I know. And so I feel that that really helps me to be able to cut through the noise to what is most important in that moment in the session. Rebecca's also extremely committed to her own healing journey and hasn't been afraid to share that with me or with others. And I really respect that about her.
Yeah. And I love that it's no different in person or on Skype. And you're someone who's had both experiences, so you can speak to that really well. That's pretty cool.
Absolutely. Yeah. I feel like sometimes people have this idea that if it's not in person, it's not as powerful. And I just simply don't think that's true. That hasn't been my experience at all.
Same here.
Yeah.
Skype is awesome.
Yeah, it's great.
Or phone, whatever.
Yeah.
And so what kind of experiences or transformations has your supporting healing work from Rebecca helped you to have in your life?
Well, it's helped me with my energy levels, and it's helped me refine my practice further, both my personal spiritual practice and the practices that I do for myself every day, but also the practices of how I'm working with others. Like maybe I'm working a little bit differently with people doing certain things before and after the sessions. It's helped me in being able to just hold more energy and do it more and more energy work with people, because I've been in a transition of moving away from body work and doing more energy healing work. And so she's really been helping me with that transition, which I appreciate so much.
That sounds good. Well, thank you so much, Laura Lee, for taking the time to speak with us today.
Thank you very much, Natalie.
And for listeners, if you are curious about learning more about Rebecca, you can listen to episode 38, episode 78, or to any of our energy reports, as Rebecca does our monthly astro energy reports on Dream Freedom Beauty. And you can also check out Rebecca and the services that she offers at RebeccaConran.com and on Instagram at RebeccaConran. Welcome to the show, Hope.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Totally. I've been following you on Instagram for a while, and I love your vulnerable, real sharing about your journey as you caretake your husband who has ALS, who is in the, what would you call the stage he's in or the place he's in with that?
I would call it very advanced stages. Mm-hmm. There's no end that we know of. We don't think of it that way, but he's definitely advanced. I mean, he's totally in bed, bound and on a vent and can't do anything on his own at this point. So I'd say that's very advanced.
Okay. Very advanced. Yeah. He's he was diagnosed, I think, in 2011, right?
Yes.
So it's 2018 as we record this. So you two have been together that whole time and you've been by his side and his caretaker and cheerleader and his partner and his wife. Yes. And everything. And wow. So I'm just really
all of it. Yeah.
I'm so excited to just receive the gifts you have to share with us today from your co-journey with Steve.
I'm so excited to be here. I'm a bit of your fangirl. So thank you for having me.
I'm so grateful to have you. And, you are going to lead us on an invocation, correct?
Yes, I am.
All right. So let's do that. And then we will jump back in with the rest of our conversation.
Perfect. Okay. So if everyone can, if you can, close your eyes. And if you can't close your eyes, at least allow yourself a little space for a pause. You know, sometimes intentionally placed pauses in your life can really help you learn to press that pause when it's not a choice and you need it. So if we could do that, I want you to breathe in with me, and I want you to hold that breath in whenever you take that deep breath in. And while you're holding it, I want you to recognize that pause and really just appreciate your body's ability to breathe. Okay, so deep breath in, take a pause, and with your exhale, sigh anything that's holding you back out. One more. Inhale in. And during this pause, I want you to just appreciate the space that you feel right in between your inhale and exhale. And sigh it out. Sometimes just the very act of appreciating that your body actually can breathe is enough to pause. And I'm going to do that one more time. And I really want to stress the appreciation aspect. Just really, I want you to feel it in your soul, the point to your, like, almost in tears, how much you're grateful for your air. Deep breath in. Pause. Feel that space that you're opening up for yourself. And sigh anything out. And just remember, you can carry that with you every day. You can do it as many times you need a day. Sometimes I do it 50 times a day. But just that pause, just take a few breaths on your own now and give yourself a little clap for giving yourself the space.
Lovely. Oh, did I interrupt or were you?
No, you're good.
Okay, cool.
It's funny, when I told Steve I was going to do an invocation, I said, I'm a little nervous. And he was in my DUI class, actually, before we dated. And he said, you should not be nervous. You used to get an entire group of addicts who were forced in your group to slow down and recognize the pause and remind us all that, you know, we have that breath that can help us pause. And I was like, oh, you're so right, babe. Thanks.
That's so funny. Oh, wow. And I love the reminder that you give that you can just do that anytime. You know, people, you've been on the Self-Care Club podcast, that your episode will come out for until after this episode goes out. But the whole self-care thing, people get it so wrapped up that it has to be this, like, big event, but it can literally be a breath in gratitude.
Oh, absolutely. It just literally will stop me when I'm about to go off a rail. I'm like, okay, hold on, hope. Take a breath. Be really grateful you can do that.
Going off that deep end.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. So did you meet Steve in your DUI class?
Yeah. So he was in my DUI class, and obviously I didn't date him then, but it was two and a half years after I was going out to a bar with friends. I remember telling them, I don't want to go out in Johns Creek. That's where I used to teach my class. I always see old patients. And they kept saying, oh, you're being silly, Hope. Come.
Oh, wait. Okay. Were you the teacher of the class?
I was.
Okay.
Yes. And so I walk into this bar and sitting with my friends, I see this face and I'm like, who is that? Why do I recognize him? Where do I recognize him from? And he says, oh, Hope. Hey, good to see you. This is Steve from your DUI class. I said, oh, my God. And I had to be really honest with him because at the time in the class, my boss thought it was really important for me to play sober, but I drank. So I said, oh, by the way, I drink and I'm planning on drinking tonight a lot. And yeah, the rest is history.
Wow. That is one of the funniest how I met stories. I love that.
Yeah.
Wow. So what year was that?
That was I met him in 2011. And so it must have been 2008 that we were doing the group.
Okay.
I was fresh out of grad school. I was like, oh, I'm going to help all the addicts in the world become sober. I'm going to be the best addiction therapist there was. And it didn't last long because I quit my job pretty quickly whenever Steve was diagnosed.
Yeah, I can imagine. I can imagine that was a necessity. And
yes.
Yeah. So I love that. I'm like, wow, we could just go just dive in a hole there. But but really, what, you know, something that I admire about you and the position you're in is that you have no choice. Well, I guess you have a choice, but it'd be like almost harder to resist it than to just accept it, than to face the fact of mortality every day. And yeah. I mean, this is like in your face, and the journey you've been on with Steve has not been this like all flowers and buttercups and puppies. It's been like intense hospital visits, wounds that don't heal, just like him being declared dead twice. And just, I mean, just you've really been through the ringer with this, I would say. I mean, yes. If I'm putting words, if I'm describing it inaccurately, please let me know.
No, you're pretty accurate there. It's been intense for sure.
Yeah.
You know, and it's interesting whenever you're going through that, you really start to learn to trust your partner. And so a lot of times I would look to Steve because doctors would be coming in and saying, oh, Hope, this is just not going to end well. And, you know, wow. He doesn't
wait,
have.
Can we just take a pause there?
Yeah.
That the doctors, I mean, they have to be real of, you know, like, oh, you're in a situation where you could die from this. You know, they got to be real, but they are telling you in those words, like, this is just, yeah. Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, and I think a lot of times people don't realize how rare it is for some doctors to see ALS patients, because up until recently, it wasn't really that well known. And there wasn't a whole lot of doctors that were seeing them because there's ALS clinics and a lot of people were going to just the clinics to see an ALS doctor. And we opted out of that. We wanted to go to the hospital near us so that we could be near our home. But yeah, doctors, they sure think they know what's going to happen. And they have taught me a lot about not allowing somebody to put what they think is going to happen into our life and let it, you know, be our truth. And they've really taught me to trust Steve. Steve knows his body. He knows what's going on. And deep down, his drive to get through this is stronger than any doctor's knowledge ever. And it's been a really beautiful thing to actually witness somebody just overcome so much despite them being told repeatedly they won't.
Wow. Yeah. And what a testament to the power of choice that we do have to not believe what we're yes. told and to examine what's true for us and follow that path.
So much.
Wow. So there's so much that I want to talk about. And part of it is just I want, you know, you share on Instagram so vulnerably about things you're going through and on your blog as well. And I also just wanted to open a space where we could just kind of flow verbally. And I want to hear more about your experience going from, you know, you're in your 20s, like life is all ahead of you, anything's possible. And suddenly you're faced with falling in love and realizing that this could end a lot sooner than you thought. What was that journey like from that kind of innocence into the diagnosis and all, like, what can you take us kind of through the beginning of that?
You know, in the very beginning, Steve and I had some serious denial around, you know, obviously things were happening to him very quickly and we still were sort of in denial about it. We kept just thinking, no, this isn't actually our reality. You know, there has to be something else. There has to be, you know, within the ALS community, there's a lot of holding on to, it could be Lyme's disease. It could be, because there are a lot of things that are masked, you know, and misdiagnosed. And so we spent a lot of time in this really tumultuous time of denial. And it really wasn't allowing us to to actually face things together. And I remember the very first time I was snapped out of denial was I was working and he fell and he was stuck on the ground. He finally got to his phone. He had gone to the bathroom on himself because he's been on the ground for so long. Oh, wow. And I looked at my boss and I said, he fell and he said he's bleeding from his head. I need to go home. And she said, well, you just don't get to leave your job. You need to find something else. If you're going to be working, you need to have somebody at home with your husband. He has ALS. You knew this. You need to be prepared. And it wasn't my boss being insensitive. She was being a boss. You know, it was realistic. You know, I can't just always leave work. So I remember thinking, gosh, this is really happening. Like my husband's really falling and not able to walk and he's not going to be able to do things. And I really have to face this. So I got a friend to come with him the next day or that day. But the next day I called off work and I said, we gotta actually face this and figure out what we're going to do. What do we want this to look like? Do we just want to keep running away from it? Or do we want to decide, hey, this is how it's going to be and we're going to do whatever we can. And so I quit my job that very day and called her and I said, you know, I'm going to be a little shitty to you and I'm not even giving you notice. I'm not coming back. Wow. I'm staying home with my husband and he needs me and I'm sorry.
And how so did I that go?
Oh, well, you know, I ended up getting guilted into going back and helping her until she found somebody. And so I went for a few more days and it was one of those things where my boss didn't come into the office because she didn't want to look me in the face. It was so awkward. But, you know, I did what I had to do to help her find a new replacement for me. And then coming home and taking care of Steve, it was wild because he was still able to walk. But it was unsafe. He had a really bad foot drop and he was falling a lot. And so there was a lot of arguing. Maybe I accepted it earlier than he did. And so I would often be like, babe, I need you to get in a wheelchair. I need you to get in a wheelchair. I need you to stop trying to push it. You're going to hurt yourself. And there was a lot of fighting and a lot of learning. You know, we were this beautiful love story. Everyone built it up into a fairy tale. And then it kind of came crashing down on us and we were fighting. And I said, oh gosh, we're not this love story after all. We're just normal people who are going to scream at each other and really feel the stress of this. And it was a lot to really overcome. I mean, it could have broken us right then and there, but thankfully we just would scream it out. We would cry it out. We would forgive and move on and keep moving forward. And really what helped us be able to move on was traveling and doing, you know, like all the things we've ever wanted to do that we just thought we couldn't do, we just started doing. Wow. There was no, I don't care how we're going to raise money, we're going to go travel. We're going to travel as much as we can. And our friends and family and community really rallied around us and supported us. And it was beautiful. And, you know, there was a lot of things that happened within ALS that you know is going to happen eventually. It's one of those things where, you know, I think a lot of people within the ALS community try to prepare themselves for, you know, you're going to need a trach, you're going to lose your voice, but there's just nothing in the world that can prepare you for looking at your husband not being able to breathe and dying and them telling you he's not going to be okay And then him coming back and him never being able to speak to you again. Like you just never hear his voice again. It just, nothing can ever prepare you for that. And it's a wild journey because there's no time for you to process it. It's just, if this happened and now you either have a choice of sitting there and feeling sorry for yourself or moving on. And if you don't move on, you're just going to have another thing happening real quick.
Piling up.
Yes. Very much.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So I hear you saying that it kind of took it to almost like a crisis point. I mean, I guess Steve falling on the ground and bleeding from his head and soiling himself is a crisis moment for you to say, okay, this is really happening and we really need to make some tough choices here.
Yeah. And, you know, I think, you know, we could have probably, looking back at it, decided we were going to do a lot of this stuff before it happened. But with Steve and I's personalities, it really needed to be a crisis. We needed to be slammed with it a little bit to face it. And really all it was acceptance. We needed to boil it down and accept that, okay, this is what's going to happen. And there's no way we're ever going to be able to predict this. So we just got to gear up, strap in, and do what we can.
Right. And I wanted to highlight that because that's such a big pattern that I've seen in my own life and in the lives of so many people is that denial until that crisis moment. And then the choice of acceptance comes. And that's kind of like that tower moment in the tarot of like, nothing's the same after that. Like you finally.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Do you have any advice for anyone who's on a similar journey who may have gotten a diagnosis or a loved one got one and they're still in that denial phase? I mean, is there any, in hindsight, is there anything you could tell your past self that maybe could help assist them through this process?
I think what, you know, Steve and I were acting out of back then was a lot of fear. We really were afraid to even face what was going to happen because it's scary. It's just so intense. And I think I would like to encourage anybody ever listening going through this to know that whatever comes, you're going to be able to get through it. You're going to be okay. And, you know, I think I would have loved if somebody had told me, look, it's going to get hard, but you can do this. You're going to be okay. And it would have really helped us be able to face it because I think we were all in shock. I mean, Steve was young and athletic, and I think there wasn't anybody able to say, okay, you guys are going to be okay. It's going to be okay. You're going to be able to do it. We just sort of had to figure that out on our own. So I think really sometimes it's just nice to hear like, it's going to get hard. It's going to be so hard, but you're so strong and you're going to be able to get through it. Everybody. I mean, no matter what it is, we all need to hear that.
Oh, and what has that taught you about what, you know, your own power?
Wow. You know, Steve and I have in a lot of ways showed each other some extreme, very extremes of our personality. And prior to taking care of Steve, I've always wanted to be able to help, but I've never really felt like I had any sort of anything in me to help people, if that makes sense. I would always feel really called to help people, but it was more like I want to fix you kind of way.
Right. Like not the savior kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And it wasn't, and I never really knew how I was going to be able to help people or if I even had it in me. And I think it's been really wonderful and it's been so empowering and it's also been very humbling and all the words. It's just been an incredible amount of eye opening into who I actually am.
Right. Well, you know, that's a big thing. Like, who are you actually? Can you sum it up? Can you give it like a word or like a three words or a sentence, or is that too much to ask?
You know, it's really interesting. So interesting you asked this. I actually was just going on a rant the other day about how much I think right now as society, we're all trying to place each other in a box. Like you're a Republican, you're a liberal, you're a caregiver, you're a teacher. And like, I feel like we are so much more multidimensional than that. There's so much more to us than just one or two or three words. And so sometimes I just have the hardest time speaking things in little sentences. You know, I could go on and on about things. But if I could sum it up, I would say I'm honest to myself now, like prior to this, I was in total denial about who I actually was as a person because I never really looked at my shadow side. I ran from it. I hid from it. It's just unnerving. It was unnerving to be like, oh, I have this inside of me. Mm-hmm. You know, I just didn't want to see it. So now I would say I'm a lot more honest. I'm caring. I care. I would say I didn't realize how much I care about the world, about the earth, planets, animals, people, until I really opened up to it. I was probably really closed. My heart was closed. And now my heart is just blown open. And that's been a lot to process because caring a lot about a lot of things can be overwhelming sometimes. And so, yeah, sort of took a lot of work to learn how to actually be a caring person. And I would say I'm strong. Those would be my words.
I'm just trying to put them into tarot. Like, what tarot cards are those?
I've been studying the tarot, so it's like good practice right there.
Yes. So something you said there was about how you're going on this rant about not putting people in a box. And I love that because that's something that I stand for so strongly here is that we are this full spectrum beyond this, you know, the mother or the teacher, Republican or Democrat, or, you know, it's like, we're multidimensional beings with freaking insane abilities beyond our wildest dreams. And we're like exploring what that means. And we get hung up on trying to just stick ourselves inside this one tiny little box and all the rules and all of that, and breaking down those rules is like the journey.
I think we forget how much individual experiences and individual thinking and feelings we all have. You know, sometimes I think we're just so exposed to so many other people's thoughts and feelings, emotions, and we forget that we have our own. You know, sometimes it's just so easy to pick up other people's and be like, oh yeah, this fits me. So I fit in their box because that's the box they're in. And we forget that maybe that one thing of us resonates with it, but the whole box may not.
Yeah. Right. I love that. So, so let's pick up again, because we were at the point where you had accepted this and you had quit your job and decided, okay, we got to face this. What? Yeah. Take us further. Keep going.
Okay. So once we were able to sort of face things, it was, wasn't long before we started to kind of get our asses kicked, but so we loved traveling. Traveling became a thing of ours because we knew at some point we would be homebound a lot more often. Mm-hmm. And so we started traveling a lot, and we were on one vacation and all of a sudden he couldn't breathe. His oxygen was down to 88. I took him to a hospital I took him to a hospital there. And the minute I walked into that hospital, I could tell right away, they are not equipped to take care of somebody like Steve. They just don't know. They didn't know anything about ALS. They couldn't understand why he wasn't breathing well. And finally I said, look, I'm going to rent some oxygen tanks from this guy over here, and I'm going to drive through the night, and I'm going to get us to our home hospital that is very familiar with Steve. I think it was Charleston, because I remember I drove and it was supposed to be like a 12-hour drive, and it was 16 hours from having to stop and suction him and change out the oxygen tubes. And we pulled up to that hospital and his oxygen was 84. And he just was struggling so much to breathe.
Can you give us a little, a standard, like what's a healthy level?
So most of us breathe around like 97, 98, 99. Some people perform 100%, but even Steve, who's on a ventilator and oxygen's never even at 100%. So it's very rare, but below 90 is when you're really starting to be struggling. You feel like, oh, I'm not getting air. I don't know what's happening.
Like suffocating.
Yeah, it's a really intense feeling. And then so to get to 87, you know, he's still breathing, obviously, but he's just not getting the oxygen he needs. And so once we got in there into the hospital, it was like, okay, traveling's done. And so it was one of those things where traveling was like our life raft. And it was like they took our raft away from us and we had to find a new one. And, you know, I think that was in our moments of, there's a phrase that's one of my favorite phrases, and it's like, hope is only isn't seen when things are good. Hope is seen when things get bad. Mm. I think the same thing with love, you know, like you really learn how much you love someone when you're taking care of them and you're watching them be deteriorating and almost dying and, you know, going through this kind of stuff. You just, you're like, the love is just undeniable. I don't even know if I answered your question because I got on a tangent.
I love the tangent. That's
okay, good.
I mean, I want to invite everyone to just let that settle in their hearts of that, you know, even if they're imagining like, what are all the things they would have to work through to allow that love to come up? I mean, I think that's one reason why sometimes people die so slowly is it gives them and their loved ones time to really process the stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, we're really fortunate. I think a lot of things with ALS has taught us, it sounds so strange to say, but it's taught us so much appreciation. You know, if we lived anywhere else, Steve wouldn't be able to be alive right now. He lives on machines that rely on oxygen and, you know, or rely on electricity. Sorry. And so it's just, you really start to see what's important and what's not, and really how lucky and grateful we are in the United States right now, like just with the way we have access to things and the fact that he even can still be here. Mm-hmm. It's just a gift.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's pretty incredible. It's pretty wild because, you know, wow, has that inspired any kind of internal questioning in you, like around, well, you know, in, I don't know, maybe this is a really stupid question. I don't know.
There's no stupid questions.
Okay. Because for like, I'm saying this because of my own experience with much more minor things. Like I need glasses and I have terrible, like I can't see without my glasses. And I'm wondering like, wow, that's amazing. You know, maybe this is totally a moot point because it doesn't matter because it's not the world we live in. But I think about like, okay, you know, a few hundred years ago, before they really had glasses technology to where it is, you know, what would my life
have
been
like?
You wouldn't
be able
to see. Right?
I think that way too because I can't see either, girl. I'm with you. So yeah, no, I think about that about everything now. Literally, I take a breath in the morning and I'm like, oh, I just breathe without a machine.
Wow.
Like, that's a beautiful thing. I get to voice. I get to actually communicate. You know, Steve's uses an eye gaze, but he's exhausted and he's not always able to communicate. And I think, God, I'm so lucky. I get to talk to whoever I want to, whenever I want to. Yeah. I can move my body. I can eat. I can taste food. I can drink coffee. You know, it's profound almost how much it makes me appreciate every tiny little thing.
Wow. So yeah. Okay. I think that's the answer to the question I was getting at. No. I mean, the question really was around like, what has why do we? It's a really existential question, but why now are we able to have these experiences that in the past would have obviously set us so far back or killed us, and hear your answer. I'm hearing without you even having to hear the question, you already answered it, but I wanted to just put it out there. I'm hearing that it's this like expansion of appreciation and sensuality and of our human consciousness, our ability to perceive and experience and be
Absolutely.
In new ways.
Yeah. I mean, without somebody realizing how much of a gift it is to see, nobody would have ever made glasses, you know?
Right. So I feel, you know, that was kind of an existential tangent there, but hey, that's where we're existential thinkers here.
We like tangents here.
Yes, we are tangential. Tangential AF, y'all. But okay, so kind of circling back around again, the journey you've been on with Steve, you've seen things that a lot of people your age have never had to deal with, and people who do have to deal with this kind of stuff usually deal with it much later in life. So this is kind of like fast tracked you on this journey, I think. Do you want to share anything about that, about this kind of like just the experience from this young age, what it's shown you? And
yeah, absolutely. It's been interesting. I always used to call myself an old soul. I just was always resonate with people who were older than me, older music. And I never actually realized how young I was until I was placed into this situation. Because truthfully, I never imagined falling in love with someone and then being told they have a 2 to 5 year life expectancy. I was 26 when he was diagnosed, and I was thinking, what? Like that just doesn't happen when you're in your 20s. That happens way later. It really showed me how much I actually never really lived in the moment. I thought I was. I thought I did. I preached that I did, and taught addicts, how to come back to their moment. But I really was never actually living in the moment, because I never actually appreciated or acknowledged how much anything could happen to any of us. And I really think it brought me very, 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 that's why I say it's a very humbling experience, because there's a lot of ways in which caregiving, especially somebody with ALS, really shows you the truths of the world and the ways in which you aren't really actually aligned with what you believe or what you're preaching. It keeps you straight, let me tell you that. But I think it was a lot of really mind-blowing, just real, this one body you're given, isn't a guarantee that it's going to last long. And we kind of all run around like, party, we're in our 20s, let's drink as much as we want and smoke packs and packs of cigarettes and eat donuts for breakfast, and who cares what we're doing to ourselves? It was bam, all of a sudden, wait a minute, that's not really a realistic reality anymore. I can't go out partying. I can't be puffing down some cigs. I need to be taking care of myself so that I can take care of another human being. And yeah, it was eye-opening, mind-blowing.
When I hear you say this, I think of oftentimes people your age reach this epiphany because they're about to become mothers.
Yes. Yep.
Have you thought about that much? It sounds like you have.
I had chosen a long time ago not to have children.
Wow.
And so it's interesting sometimes to think, maybe I chose not to have children because I knew one day I was going to take care of my husband. Who knows? Sometimes we're a lot more aware of what's going to happen to us than we really give ourselves credit.
That's what I was saying wow to, was like, wow at how that's so aligned with what unfolded.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, in the community, do you know people who do have kids, young kids who are also caring for a partner?
Yeah, it's interesting. A lot of the people that have kids also have caregivers. Which is, I think that's how they're able to do it. I couldn't imagine being a sole caregiver for somebody and having a kid. I just don't think you could do it, because you would have to leave one or the other, and you just can't,
Yeah. You need two of you. You need a caregiver.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Wow. And I love that. I just love that. This is your motherhood journey, essentially, but it's instead of
it really
bringing birth, you're tending to the decline. And, what kind of feelings has that brought up in you? I mean, I already kind of know the answer to this because I've read your stuff but I just want to bring that up and share it out here and just say, like, where has this taken you? Having, instead of birthing and raising someone and caretaking in that way, having to caretake someone who's on the decline, what kind of stuff has that really brought up for you?
To be honest, it's broken me 100%, like, into a billion pieces. And it was one of those things where once I was broken, I thought, oh my God, I'm never going to be put back together. Like, I'm just broken forever. This has just been so much, so heartbreaking to watch you know, someone so resilient and, you know, passionate about life just continually get knocked down from a disease.
Yeah.
And when I was broken, I was really faced with a dark side of myself that I was like, oh, Lord, I cannot believe this is who I am and who I've become. And I really thought that I had become a bad person and that I was going to always be and I was never going to be okay. And I think that happens to a lot more people that want to, than they want to actually admit. And it's been, and it was humbling. It's really helped me be able to see me on every level and realize I'm not a bad person. You know, I'm just a person who deeply cares and loves my husband and is feeling it. It's really in the moment and is really allowing this moment to do everything it needs to do to transform me. Because honestly, I wouldn't be who I am today had I not gone through this past 6+ years.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't have looked at my shadows. I really don't think I would have. I was perfectly content running away from them, pretending that I resented whoever was in front of me in that moment instead of actually tracing it back to the roots of everything and facing where did this shadow come from and why am I doing this? And where, you know, like really questioning what made me do the things I was doing. And it was humbling, but also I will say empowering as hell, because to be that broken and then to be able to slowly, I mean, I'm still putting myself together. I'm still broken a bit. And I think I probably will be for a long time. And it's okay. Like, it's just feeling okay with it and then slowly putting the pieces back together. It's been really empowering. It's just this beautiful release of the pressure to always be perfect,
yeah,
to always be on, you know, to always know the right thing to say, the right thing to do. And, you know, it's just so much pressure we all put on ourselves. And then when you kind of release it, it's just beautiful. It's just, it feels so good to just be you and put forth effort to be a better you every day and just accept who you are that in that moment.
Mm. Okay. We're going to kind of tease some of this apart because I love this.
Okay.
All right. So, you know, you're saying that you were broken and you were starting to think that maybe you were a bad person. Can you describe some of what that looked like? Like, how did you know you were broken? What was happening? What were you feeling? What were you thinking or saying or doing?
Yeah. So there was a while there where Steve had just been through so much that he was done. You know, he was like, I'm done with this. I can't do it anymore. And then he would come back, you know, 2 or 3 days later and say, you know what? That was just a moment of weakness. I'm back. Mm-hmm. And so it's sort of been the whole time I've said to him, this is all you. I'm just here to take care of you, but you're calling the shots. When you want to be done, I'll be done with you. When you want to keep going, I'm going in with you. And so he was having a lot of these up and down moments of just, I'm done. I'm not done. I'm done. I'm not done. And one day, and I was laying on the ground. I was so exhausted and he needed me so much that day. And it was one of those days where all of a sudden he was like, no, I want to live again. And I looked at him and I was like, no, I said, I'm fucking done. I'm done with this. You can't live anymore. I'm done. And I just lost it. I screamed, shouted, I threw things at the wall. I cried, I kicked things. Like, I stayed in that moment for a good 24 hours. I cried. I made him feel so bad. And I remember the next day, it still kind of chokes me up when I think about it.
It's choking me up.
I'm still recovering from it. You know, like, I literally, the next day I woke up and I was like, oh my God, Hope, you're the worst person ever in the world. And like, I spent months and months of self-loathing. I just thought I was a terrible human for telling him you need to die. And, you know, he thankfully never thought I was a terrible human. And when I was breaking down with him after that, I'm like, I'm such a bad person. I can't believe I said that to you. He said, no, you're a better person than me. I promise you, I would have been gone a long time ago. Just give yourself a break and, you know, go do what you got to do to get over it. He was like, he actually told me, go to your studio and splash around some paint. It will make you feel better. It's going to be okay. You're not a terrible person. You had a breakdown. And thankfully in that moment, he gave me, I wouldn't say permission. I just can't think of another word, but you know, he gave me that. It's okay. You said something you didn't mean. Like, you're not a terrible person. It's okay.
Approval.
Yeah, there I go. I guess I just need to be told I'm okay a lot.
but that's okay, Hope.
Thank you.
But, and wow, so the power of that moment, I mean, anyone listening might be able to see how caretaking for someone and then telling them that you're done, like that is some shadow shit right there.
Yes. Oh, yeah. So much.
Like, especially, you know, if you're that person's everything, like he relies on you to live and you're
literally, yeah.
Yeah, like yeah. Literally relies on you. So that moment, I mean, could you have sort of, did you feel it sort of bubbling up and you were just trying to deny that too? And it finally, the pressure couldn't be contained, or was it just kind of like more just total subconscious release?
It's interesting. You know, I do a lot of looking back because I'm always trying to process and kind of untangle this web I'm in.
Right. And learning. And, grow.
Yeah. And so, you know, a year prior to this breakdown, I finally admitted to myself that I was sometimes mean to Steve. Like before that, I wouldn't even admit it. I was ego to the extreme because I had been put on a pedestal for choosing to marry my husband despite him having ALS. You know, we dated 4 months. He got diagnosed. He proposed to us 2 days later. We got married 2 months later. We were on Say Yes to the Dress. There was all this publicity. You know, we were the fairy tale. Mm-hmm. We were, you know, it was just, I was on a pedestal because everyone was like, you're amazing because you decided to stay with your husband. Mm-hmm. And
well,
I honestly,
well, let's just say you decided to stay with the man who you knew for 4 months and married. And then,
exactly.
Right? Like that. Right, that's yeah. True. I mean, he is your husband, obviously, but you know, this is like a really fast track thing. And
yes, yeah. So much so. Yeah. And so I just accepted being put on the pedestal and rode with it and yeah. Loved all the praise. And I remember the day I finally realized that I was being mean to Steve, it really was a shock. I said, oh my gosh, I never wanted to actually admit that I had any meanness in me. I was just this good girl, a sweet girl. I couldn't do anything wrong, you know? Mm-hmm. So it took a solid year of me actually facing it till the point that I broke down. I wouldn't say it was just all of a sudden, but I will say it was one of those releases. I feel like it was one of those things where I like literally caught the house on fire or a life on fire. And then I couldn't put the fire out, if that makes sense. Like it just needed to take its course. It needed to burn. It needed to do what it needed to do. And then when it went out, I needed to forgive myself and then be able to move on.
That's kind of how I think those shadow journeys can feel, is when you first realize that there's a part of you that isn't all perfect and beautiful. And you're
yeah.
like, no, you're like, get the hell out of here, that part of
yeah.
me.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it's like, I'm here to stay.
Ignoring it too. I think right. that's the thing that I sometimes forget to give myself a little pat on the back. Like, good job, Hope. You faced that shit
mm-hmm.
all the way up until you caught it on fire. And burnt it and released it.
So how did you face it? I mean, once you first realized this, and cause I think so, literally every person is walking around with some part of them that they wish they could get rid of and just, yeah. it would just disappear. But
it doesn't do that.
It doesn't do that. So what, you know, you can hear in this space, you can either share what you did or in hindsight, what you've learned and how you would approach that, you know, for the next kind of shadow thing that comes up, or you know, are you just engaged with your shadow now? Tell us, what's your relationship with your shadow like?
Actually, I feel like that should be a question we ask everybody we meet ever.
But so how's your shadow today?
Yeah, but okay, so to be honest, it's been a weird process. Like in the very early stages, I was meditating and I was doing yoga and I was doing a lot of, like, I would manifest things mm-hmm. and I would be like, wow, I made that happen. And it was so ego driven, so much so I didn't even, it was so hard to even look at how much my ego was running the show. And I remember thinking, well, I'm asking for me to stop feeling resentful, or me to stop being annoyed at Steve, or for me to stop being mean. Why isn't it just going away? Why is it still there? I don't understand.
Why can't I manifest this away?
Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. why can't I just magically make it disappear? What's happening? And so I think there was a lot of understanding around, that's not how it works, Hope. And I had to really start to see myself in the moment of being mean, because I, like most of us, have trained myself at a very young age to escape the moment easily. And so if I was being mean, I just flip a switch.
Flip a switch.
And all of a sudden, I'm not really noticing that I'm being mean until after. And so I really had to train myself to catch myself in the moment of doing it. And that's why the pause that I talked about earlier during their invocation has been such an important thing for me, because now I will feel it. I'll feel it start to, like, I'll feel that like tinge in my stomach and that weight on my chest. And I know, ooh, I'm getting triggered. I'm about to be real angry. I need to just take a break. Breathe for 1 minute. And, you know, because sometimes all I get is a minute, you know,
right.
Like Steve mm-hmm. needs me. He needs me. So I'm taking that 1 minute and I'm like, okay, just breathe. And then I really like to notice the pause in between my inhale and exhale, because I just feel like that one little pause makes me realize that I have space to not react. And it is a practice. It's not something that you just instantly all of a sudden get, you know,
right.
You get it and then you're doing great for a while and then you stumble. And so I think sometimes the stumbling is what keeps people back down. And we just have to keep standing back up and keep doing it, because at the end of the day, I want to feel like I'm a good person. You know, I want to feel like I'm giving my husband the best quality of the end of his life that I can be. And of course, I'm human and I allow for that. And I know that it's intense and I'm going to be sad and frustrated and tired, but it doesn't mean I have to be mean, you know? If that makes sense.
Right. And you have the choice, and in the power of that self-awareness in that moment is the power of your choice.
Exactly. I think you have to really look at it first, because there was a long time where I wouldn't even look at it.
Exactly. Right. You have to first, it's that self-awareness. You have to like accept that you're actually doing it. We all live in such denial of our shadow
exactly.
aspects of how we treat ourselves, how we treat others. And honestly, I mean, maybe this is just my ignorance here, but I feel like one part of us would want to just maybe even just, I don't know, it's like an ultimate achievement, shadow integration unlocked level of like, let's just be so self-aware and accepting of everything and, you know, like, can we do it all at once? But I don't think that's how it works. It's like you said some people, you stumble and then you have to remember and do it again. And I think it's because we're just unweaving and untangling, and like, there's just so much shadow that we can't do it all at once. And that's the, like, that's why it's so important to have that awareness.
Absolutely. And I think it's important to, when you're trying to change your outward behavior towards anybody, you have to really, really be kind to yourself too. Mm-hmm. And I struggled with that for a while, because I would say, oh, Hope, why can't you just get it? Like, why can't you just be nice? What's wrong with you? Something is seriously wrong with you. You have a mental health disorder. And, you know, here I am, a therapist diagnosing myself,
right.
Which I don't have a
and
mental
shaming
health.
Yourself.
You know, like, I'm just totally putting myself down and shaming myself. Exactly. And so I think that's also a really important part of the process, is you got to be kind to yourself, because it's not easy. And, you know, I don't know whoever told us we were supposed to be perfect, but we're not.
All right. The advertisements who tell us so that we realize that we're not perfect, so that we go buy their thing to try to be perfect.
Right. And then that thing just makes us feel worse about ourselves, because we're just buying into the consumerism of the world.
Exactly. Because we're not actually addressing our shadow, who just wants to be seen and approved.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So something, I'm like, okay, there's all the things. I'm like, let's get into all the shadow things. But, you know, what has been your grieving process? And you've shared some of it. I mean, from the very beginning, there's been that grief process and the denial and the processing and the facing the shadow and all this stuff. But do you live with grief on a daily basis, or what's that like, facing your, you know, caretaking for your husband who has this disease that is here, whether we like it or not?
You know what's really interesting is we didn't grieve you know, when Steve lost his voice, it was so sudden. We just were thrown into me learning to take care of a trach and all of a sudden learning how to take care of somebody who couldn't communicate with me. And then right after that, he got something called gastroparesis, where he would vomit anything I put into his stomach. So then I was digging vomit out of his throat and suctioning it out of his lungs because he was aspirating. And, you know, we were in and out of the hospital. He got to be 67 pounds, and I had to really fight for him to be able to get IV nutrition, which would sustain him and build him back up. And, you know, from there he got the wound, which meant he couldn't get out of bed anymore. And so, like, it was a really weird thing. We never grieved any of that until one day Steve said to me, he said, "You know what I noticed?" He said, "We don't plan for our future. You know, we don't ever think about, oh, you know, in March of next spring, we want to get bees or anything." He's like, "We don't ever plan for our future." And I said, "Yeah." I said, "I guess it was just because we're, you know," and here I'm trying to put a positive spin. I'm like, "Yeah, it's just because we're living in the moment." He's like, "No, Hope, that's not it." He's like, "We have forgotten to embrace the fact that we're afraid to plan for the future because all of our future plans had been ruined. Like, we never actually grieved the fact that he was no longer, you know, like things like I can't cuddle with him because it hurts him. Or I can't hear his voice except for when I listen to our documentary or things like that." And so it took him being in bed with a wound and not being able to get out of bed for us to really start to grieve some of it. Because, you know, I guess because life kind of slowed down a little bit, but also because in those moments, Steve was starting to prepare for, you know, what if I am done with this? Yeah. What if this journey is over for me? And he was really starting to kind of reflect on it. And so, yeah, it was pretty powerful. And I don't know that we fully really knew how to grieve it, or if we still know how to, if that makes sense, because it's strange. It's a strange thing to grieve a loss of something while somebody's still here, because in reality, I'm just so grateful he's here that it's sometimes hard to think about anything else, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Do you all talk about, you know, when he does die, what he wants to have done with him? I mean,
we have a lot of conversations, actually, which is a really beautiful thing. And I really encourage everyone to, because I feel like it's something that really will give me some peace of mind when he's not here. He really wants me to take a big long road trip and spread his ashes and all the places we didn't get to go. And that way he is there with me, you know, because he's very well traveled, and traveling was a really important thing for him. And I'm not that well traveled. So he says, "I want you to go to Europe. I want you to go here." And, you know, he's dreaming all these places for me, and he wants me to take him with him, you know. And I think that's a really beautiful thing. And I believe it's going to be a really big healing process when the time comes for that. Mm-hmm. And then he'll often joke around with me. Steve has got quite a dirty sense of humor. I don't know if that's the right word, but he'll say things like, "Now, you used to date a bunch of assholes before me. I will come and haunt the shit out of you if you're dating an asshole." And I tell him, "I'm not dating unless it's Leonardo DiCaprio, babe. You don't have to worry about that." You know? So we're open as can be, which is a really beautiful place to be at. You know, there's no feelings getting hurt if we talk about things that's going to happen after he's gone. You know, he really wants to be a part of it while he's here.
Right. And do you all plan for your future, you know, not that future, not the death future, but the life future? Do you now plan?
You know, we actually made a plan, which was like our first plan we made forever, for spring. He wants to get some people to help him be able to go outside and, you know, go up to the garden. He wants to see my garden this year, and which is at the top of our hill, and it's going to be a bit of a complicated thing, but we have lots of manpower. So I'll just be like, "Hey guys, guess what? You're carrying Steve to a garden today."
Right. And how heavy is he?
Oh, right now he's somehow a miraculous 145 pounds, which is a far cry from when he was 67 pounds. So
Wow. That's incredible. So yeah. I want to talk a little bit about, you know, obviously Western medicine is why Steve is here.
Yes.
With us. But what are some of your other approaches to healing outside of Western medicine that you've used concurrent with it to supplement this journey? And what have the effects been?
Oh, I love that you're asking this because it's been a really interesting thing. You know, Western medicine only goes so far. And he is on IV food, which, you know, it saved his life. It made him gain a ridiculous amount of weight, and it still is saving his life. But it only goes so far mm-hmm. as hemoglobin levels and skin. You know, that's why he was able to get the wound, because he was only getting IV food. And he was in the hospital when he got that wound. But, you know, I started studying a year ago. I decided to take the Chestnut School of Herbs herbal immersion class. Cool. And I went into it thinking, well, I'm just going to do this to help Steve, but it has helped me so much more than I even expected it could. But we're very limited as far as what he can take, just because of either a contraindication or a tolerance level or, you know, absorption problems. But he does a lot of nettles because it helps build his hemoglobin.
Like, do you do infusions?
Yeah, I make him tea. Mm-hmm. And I do, I'm so cheesy, but I do a little prayer over his tea as I'm making it. And I really set a lot of intentions into it. And when I do his wound, I'm like holding my hands on it, visualizing it being healed. I make him a Manuka honey, CBD, calendula, and comfrey honey for his wound. And that's why it's actually been able to heal. Although it's healed, he had a stage 4, which, if for those who don't understand what that means, it was the whole way to the bone. Mm. And when you have a stage 4 heal, the skin is forever fragile. And so he'll be healed one day, and the next day we turn him, he's not healed. So you have to continue to treat it like a wound, mm-hmm. Forever. So, you know, that's a really weird thing to swallow. Like, mm-hmm. oh, you're healed, but we still have to treat you like you're not healed. Mm-hmm.
And I just want to say, you said there that it was so that you're really cheesy, but I just want to offer that is actually the opposite of cheesy. It is just real, so embodying that true essence of wholeness and healing at whatever capacity that you carry, that especially as women that we carry and that we recognize. And that's one of our gifts.
Yeah, you know, I'm not surrounded by a whole lot of people who agree with that other than an online community, which is why I think being able to be connected to people online is such a powerful thing.
Yeah.
So, thank you for reflecting that back to me. I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
We also do – he does tolerate some food, but it's literally like 60 cc's. And for people who don't know what that is, it's like maybe a shot and a half or two shots. So I give him a beet every day because – you know, we need to focus on things that will help him build blood.
Wow.
And he gets lemon water. It's because lemon kind of helps balance your pH, and it's really helped with his UTIs. He has a Foley in, so, which is a catheter. And so he gets UTIs all the time. I mean, infection is, something that most ALS patients, once they're at all compromised, will have to live with forever. And, you know, when I first started doing herbs, there was a lot of doctors who were like, you're just going to hurt him, Hope. This is just not smart. And they did not support me. And our infectious disease doctor was one who so beautifully supported me. He said, I don't know anything about it, but I'm trusting you because I know you love your husband and you're not going to hurt him. And whenever Steve would improve, he would call and he'd say, whatever you're doing is working. And it was just a really sweet thing to have a doctor actually be on my side, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You go, Hope. You do whatever you want to do naturally, and I'll support you. Thank you.
Right, and you've gotten to see so up close and personal that fear of the feminine as it's manifested in the healthcare system. Which, it doesn't have to be that way.
It doesn't,
right?
Because, you know, I think obviously there needs to be a bit of education because there are some things out there that can hurt you, but that doesn't mean you fear it. That means you educate people and you actually educate yourself, because there's so much more we could be helping ourselves with naturally. Mm. And it's really beautiful the way the earth provides for us. And, you know, I think Steve's connection to the earth actually, and then him getting some earth medicine, is really why it's so powerful, because he's a nature guy, and then to be able to get its medicine, it's been a good thing.
Totally. And you know, you said the earth provides, and it's like that medicine is literally the dandelions or Usnea in our front yards, right?
Exactly.
Totally. You know, before I ask another question, or before we wrap this up, whichever way we want to go, and maybe move into a secret episode, I want to know, is there anything that you just wish people would ask you? You know, because there's, like, I feel like I don't know what I don't know, and especially because I don't have any experience caretaking for someone or going through this. Is that something that speaks to you at all?
You know, it's really interesting. Well, the question I actually get asked the most is, how are you? And I actually have a really allergic reaction to the question. So really, I've been trying for a really long time to put to words why that actually gives me an allergic reaction. And I came to a conclusion the other day that I feel like I want people to talk to me about more than just, how are you? You know, I'm more than a how are you, if that makes sense. And I think a lot of caregivers will experience this, especially further into diagnosis, is that people stop having normal conversations with you because it's because they feel like they're being respectful to you because you're going through hell and they don't want to like bring their normal everyday bullshit to you. But I want you to do that, you know, and I can almost guarantee a lot of caregivers would rather you come over and chat with them as though they're still normal humans, even if we're very removed from the real world. We're still, you know, we're still of the world. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that answered your question because it's not really a question being asked to me, but that's just what came to mind. I think maybe somebody needed to hear it.
It's so on point because I think a lot of people shy away from talking to others who are going through these experiences because we're scared that we might say or do the wrong thing because we're so locked out of our own shadows. And here you are, you know, facing it and we don't want to. We're like, no, deny. And
oh,
really,
that is such a very poignant thing to say. I'm so glad you said that. Yeah,
totally. And so it's like, okay, maybe not every caretaker is okay with this, but I have a feeling that a lot of them are willing to just get real. Like, this is life.
Yeah.
Or to just talk about some, like, whatever. Some just, like, what did you see on TV?
Tell me about your date you went on, you know, that was terrible and why the guy was awful. Like, tell me about it. I want to hear.
Right? Like, life keeps going on. And this is part of life. How do we deal with it?
Yeah. And I think you mentioned a really important thing is that sometimes it's really hard to face death at a young age, to really look at, you know, here we are facing death. And that's hard for some people.
Yeah. I think it's hard for everyone.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, because it sucks. It just sucks. Like, there's no way around it. You have to go through it. And
yeah,
there's no magic bullet.
No. And I think something I would like to add, if that's okay, is that
all day.
One of the beautiful things that Steve and I have done is we've really explored our relationship with God, with the soul, with, you know, what happens when you die. And I think so many of us have just been told a story that, you know, is just handed down from some book and either you resonate with it or you don't. And then it's like, if you don't, what else is there? And I just find it so beautiful that we've been able to sort of get a personal understanding of what his soul actually is. And the fact that his body on this earth is what's going to die, but his soul isn't. And I don't know if that will resonate with anybody unless they just really get it and they're really there and they really feel the same way. Because some people I've said this to, they're like, I don't know. I think when you die, you die. I'm like, well, okay, that's what you want to think.
That's the great debate.
Yeah. And I think that it's something that's really beautiful to just touch base with your loved one. Like, what do you think will happen? And, you know, it's been a really lovely way for me to feel like I'm always going to have Steve with me no matter what. He may not be here physically, but he's always going to be, his soul's always going to be with me.
And just to speak to those who think you die, you live on in the memories and hearts and thoughts of everyone who ever knew you.
Absolutely. 100%.
Right? So, yeah. I mean, look at all the ancient people who have been dead for thousands of years that we still talk about. I mean, like,
oh, yeah.
I mean, they still live on.
Steve is somebody that will be spoken about forever, you know? For right. sure.
It's so wild. So I'm just going to do a little real talk here live on the podcast. You know, I've been doing these secret episodes, but I'm kind of moving towards not doing them and just doing longer episodes.
I'm down with that.
You're down with that?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So let's hope something that has been, I've been really guided to focus on more. I mean, I guess I've been focusing on this for years because I studied soil and gardening and compost, and I've been obsessed with fungi and bacteria forever. And so that's like the kind of scientific spectrum of this, end of the spectrum of this. But the other end of the spectrum is our human experience of death and decay. And I just want to know, how has your relationship or understanding of death and decay been changed through this experience with caretaking?
You know, it's interesting. I don't know which came first, the apple or the chicken or the egg thing here, but I started to really see the decay that happens every year with nature, and I really started to follow the wheel, you know, and I sort of started to embrace, like, I used to hate winter. I dreaded it. I dreaded the cold. I'm just really cold intolerant, so I would dread winter, and now I'm having a magical winter because I'm understanding that it's the death cycle of letting things that don't serve you go. And I feel like if we remove some of the fear on death, it really helps us see ways in which, you know, you mentioned before we got on this call, you said in a past life, I did this. And I think that's sort of part of it. It's like, you know, we all sort of die. Certain parts of us die all the time. And then a whole nother part of us carries on. And I think it's really kind of helped me embrace it in real day to day, you know, cycle kind of thing. And also, prior to Steve getting diagnosed, I don't know if this is a direction you want to go in or not, but I'm feeling
whatever,
it's just
take
coming,
it.
So I'm going to let it go there. You know, I had a different definition of God. You know, I grew up in a very religious home, and I remember, you know, going to church all the time and not understanding why it didn't resonate with me. I would feel really disconnected, and I would feel kind of sad because I would look around and I would see all of these women and praising, and they would feel really connected, and I always wanted that, but I never felt like I had it.
Me too.
Yeah. And I remember also feeling afraid to find my own relationship because I felt like if it didn't fit this box that we were taught that it had to fit, you know, this is what you're supposed to understand God as, and this is how you communicate, and this is, you know, it's a he, and, you know, there was just all these things where it just didn't resonate with me. And so then I kind of just turned away from it, and I never really decided to have my own relationship until I met Steve and until we were faced with this extreme darkness. And I said, you know, we need to realize that sometimes in the dark is when you're able to see the light shining, you know, because when we're in the light, you don't see the light, you don't always see it. And so we really decided to develop our own understanding and our own relationship, which I really try to encourage everyone to do. It's that connection. What you know, it's finding what you feel is that for you. And really finding, like, our understanding of God and our understanding of what God is doing in our lives and what God's doing in the world. And, you know, it really kind of gives you peace with the death aspect. But it's a strange journey to take because it's not one that's very highly encouraged to do so. I feel like we're very encouraged to take what is given to us from other people. And I feel like this journey has really shown that, you know, you don't have to pick up with somebody hands you. You know, you can develop your own relationship with anybody, with any deity, with any being, and it's your own and it's your understanding and it's what you feel. And when you feel that, that's when peace comes, because you know, you know, it's like you're open. I don't know. I guess it's me, because I sort of opened my intuition and opened to my feelings and learned to trust myself through the process of taking care of somebody. But, you know, when you can really trust that what you're feeling is something that's really there, it's just brings so much peace. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that really makes sense, but.
Well, I guess what I hear you saying, and when you're talking about this, what comes to mind is you've really learned how to take out that middleman and just own your own connection to source and God,
yeah,
or whatever word you want to put it. And that's something that we've been taught not to trust.
Exactly. And I think there's such an allergic reaction to the word God. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because a lot of people have been hurt by a lot of, you know, religions, and
yeah,
it's just sad and it's real and it's a really real shadowy thing. And yeah, I think sort of removing what anybody thinks of you, what anybody thinks of what you believe, has been a really empowering thing. It's like, I don't have to answer to you about what I believe in, or anybody, which is really nice. Mm-hmm. I want that for everybody.
And how do you, wow. You know, I have never thought of it in this way, but I feel like one of the reasons why there's such that allergic reaction to the word God is because there's so many different camps of the people who are still so embroiled in the conditioning that there's only one way and their way is right.
Right, exactly.
Exactly. Not even go there.
Then, I know. That's a whole nother, like, episode.
It's like a whole nother podcast.
Yeah.
And then there's the people who have left that camp. They're like, wait, that never felt right. And they're like, they just don't even want to go there. They've kind of relegated anything about that to,
yeah,
the shadow, because they're like, wow, something about it felt wrong. It felt like, you know, it just, I don't know what it is and I don't know what feels right. So that's going over here. And they're just not ready to face that. And then there's the aspect of someone who's realized, oh, I don't subscribe to that religion or that doctrine or that, well, those rules or whatever, because they're telling me that what I feel and know is not right, and not to,
right,
trust it, that it's like, exactly, the devil. And
exactly. And we're taught to fear things so,
yes,
much. And I just don't see as God as somebody I'm supposed to fear. Like, I have an allergic reaction whenever somebody says, oh, you're such a God-fearing woman. No, I'm not. I don't fear God. Like, I don't think I don't actually think it's a he either, but that's a whole nother subject. But I just fear is something that we're so taught so deeply. And I think fear brings out so many negative emotions, because instead of looking at why are we afraid, we're rebelling against it. You know, we don't want to feel it. We don't want to feel the feelings.
Denial, deny, deny.
Yeah. You sense a theme happening.
Yes. The theme is becoming clear here. So I sense that there's, you know, some really beautiful expression of your own embodiment as God, as the divine, that's coming through. I mean.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I'm still learning, but of like how to, you know, it's not that I'm still learning. It's like, I'm still trying to put it into words. Does that make sense?
Yeah, sure.
Because it was an experience that Steve and I both had together, where suddenly we knew what we felt was God. And like, God more to me is like an energy, sort of just a white, beautiful light. Like, when I actually see God in meditations or dreams, it's not an actual person. Mm-hmm. It's just an energetic, beautiful light and shining down on me and filling me back up, sort of. It's just big encouraging light. And I've been trying to put it to words, because there's so many things that I feel whenever I feel like I receive messages from God. Mm-hmm. Which is just such a wild thing. I never in a million years thought that I would be sitting here telling somebody, like, I'm getting messages from God.
I'm channeling God.
Yeah, like, it just sounds so strange. And I believe that there was probably a patient or some point a time that came to me saying something like that. And I looked at them like they were crazy. know it. But, you know, and so sometimes I have just this hard time explaining how it is. Like, I will be shaking after I just get this urge to pick up my journal and write. And then after I write it, I'm shaking and I just feel so purged. It's just really wonderful thing. And it only started happening after I was open to it.
What opened you to it? Was there a moment?
Okay, so Steve had died and he was brought back to life. And I walked into the room and I remember them telling me, he's not really there. We put him in a coma. And I said, no, he's there. And I felt Steve talking to me. Like, I felt when he died, I felt him come talk to me. And so I walked in the room and I talked to him and he was communicating with me, even though he was not awake. And everybody was looking at me like I was insane. And I said, I'm telling you, he's there. He's fine. He's going to be okay. And when he woke up, he had a total he remembered this happening as well.
He knew the conversation, essentially.
Yeah. And so
that only happened to me when I was on acid with someone. So
Steve and I just get to experience it without drugs, which is, you know, a little bit more intense, actually.
Oh, man.
but yeah. And so that actually started happening a lot to where I would just know it was a really beautiful thing. I would just know what Steve needed. And it was like we were thrown into a situation where he wasn't able to communicate. But yet here I was knowing what he needed. And I remember feeling almost bad because I had been taught for so long that people who think that they can read other people are wrong.
Right.
And I remember thinking, this can't be bad. There's nothing bad about me being in tune and, you know, in touch with my husband. This can't be bad. And so we had a conversation one day and he said, well, Steve and I like to do little ceremonies. We don't get all crazy about them. We do really simple ones just because it's just what we have to do.
You know,
I can't light candles around oxygen machines and things like that. So, you know, we just do our own like little simplified thing. And he said, let's have a ceremony. And he said, you know, you're starting to understand and I'm starting to understand that there is way more of a connection out there. And prior to this, he didn't really have any kind of, he didn't really know what he believed in either. And so we had this little thing where we both sat and meditated. And when we both woke up, we both had the same visual. And it was wild because I never experienced that with anybody. And I don't know that I ever will again. And it was just one of those moments where we felt God and what we understand it and knew instantaneously, like everything we had done that we were told was wrong. Like, it's wrong to trust your intuition. It's wrong to, you know, think that you can help people heal or anything like that wasn't wrong all this time. And so, yeah, we really started to kind of adventure and explore. And it was a really fun time for Steve and I because we were curious. We wanted to learn about everything and we studied other religions. And, you know, it was one of those things where we weren't trying to take anyone's religion and make it our own. We just wanted to understand everything that there was out there. Mm-hmm. And actually, I don't know if this is related or not, but it keeps coming to me. So I'm going to say it if that's okay.
Yeah.
During this time, we met this guy and he was an incredible energy healer. I mean, he had really helped Steve work on some things. Like he was having difficulties focusing his eyes because of medication. And he really helped Steve focus his eyes. And when he left, he told Steve something. He said, you know, I don't know how to say this to you, but I feel like you manifested your ALS. Wow. And Steve, in that moment, I remember he shut down. He was so upset. He was like, why the fuck would anybody ever say that to me?
And I mean, that's like the ultimate thing that people say.
Yeah. And it took me a really long time to be able to give him any kind of like an answer to why somebody would say that to him. Until it was Christmas of 2015. It was Christmas Eve. I woke up that day and Steve wouldn't wake up. I was shaking him. I'm screaming at him. He won't wake up. And so I call 911. We go into the hospital and he's in a coma. And I said, I know he overdosed. And they're all looking at me like, did you overdose him? I said, no, he has malabsorption problems. You guys have him on a ridiculous amount of pain medicine. My gut's telling me he overdosed. Just give him some Narcan. I'm telling you, that's what it was. I just knew. I don't know how I knew. I just knew.
Because he was telling you from the other side.
Yeah. God was telling me. And he was probably telling me for sure. Yes. And I remember scrolling through Facebook that night because he was in a coma going into Christmas. And it was Steve. Everyone pray for Steve. Visualize Steve. Good energy to Steve. And it was viral. I mean, there was millions of people praying and caring and sending love and seeing Steve healed and sending energy in every way. And Christmas morning, he woke up.
Wow.
And all of a sudden, all these people had hope. All these people believed in miracles. All these people who were sort of, the world is doomed, we're all effed, just sort of saw the world in a different way. And I said to Steve, you didn't manifest ALS. ALS was just the tool that God used to make you be able to get to a lot of people. Like, you wouldn't be able to reach the amount of people you do without ALS. And you have had a lasting impact. It will ripple for the rest of the world, like the rest of your life and the rest of everyone's life. Everyone you've touched, it will be carried on. And that is why you got ALS. You didn't want to be sick. You wanted to be a great man who would change the world. And that is what you are. And he was like, oh, and he cried. And I cried. And then, you know. Yeah. I don't know what made me want to say that, but it just came up. So
I just want to let it sink in for a second for people. Like, really feel that power of, it's not that you manifested this ALS, it's that your lasting impact came through this vessel.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And how powerful of a beautiful message and experience. And it's unfortunate. Well, maybe this is even my denial of the shadow saying this, that it's unfortunate it had to come through ALS, but it's like death and decay are part of life. And why does it have to be unfortunate? It's hard. It's shitty.
It's a great teacher.
It's a great teacher. It's also beautiful. And, you know, before, just for folks listening, before we got on this conversation, I made it clear to Hope that she didn't have to feel like she had to wrap this up with a bow on top and make it pretty. Like, I wanted this to be real and whatever it is. But the truth is, you've made it pretty, not by forcing it to be, but by sharing how it is.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Okay, good.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
You know, because I think sometimes it's a scary subject to talk about because ALS is awful and terrible. And, you know, it can be pretty depressing. But when you look at the people who are living, I want to repeat that like 17,000 times, because a lot of people will treat an ALS patient like they've already died. No, they're living. They're very much alive. And they are incredible. They're just, the impact they have on the world is incredible. I remember when the Ice Bucket Challenge happened, the world changed in that moment. And I very much equate it to a lot of the ALS patients just really being able to get their message out to people. And I've really seen the ripple through the world in a positive way. And it's just been a really beautiful thing to see. It's just something that you can't deny if you see it, you know?
So before we wrap up, I want to know if there's any, I don't know if this is okay with you and Steve or not, but if there's, we've talked a lot about you and your experience, but is there anything that you think or know Steve would want to share? And I know it's quite a feat for him to communicate, so I didn't want to even ask to
request that. Steve's biggest message has always been to everybody since he's gotten diagnosed was, don't wait until you're sick to deal with whatever it is that's blocking you from living your fullest life. Because we are all given this just enormous gift of this thing that's called existing, you know? And I think he's always just really wanted to inspire people to live as fully as you possibly can. And that means you have to embrace the negative stuff and you have to face it, because otherwise it's just going to keep popping up and interrupting the beautiful stuff. And so I really believe Steve would echo that for sure, because he says it to everybody.
Perfect.
And he's also napping, or else I would go be like, hey, babe. And he loves his naps.
Don't we all?
Yeah.
What a beautiful message, and what a beautiful inspiration for people to not be afraid to face their shadow, because they're strong enough to embrace the shadow.
And, you know, on the other side of the shadow is like the most ridiculous amount of clarity that is just beautiful. It just makes so many things in your life that never made sense all of a sudden make sense.
That's we all want gift. That. That's the gift. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Well, Hope, thank you so much. And before we
thank you.
Sign off here, I want to know, where can people find you? I know you have your Instagram and some websites. Yes. Just share whatever you feel like sharing.
Okay, so I'm on Instagram under Hopi Ann C. And Steve and I have a website, Hope for Steve. Isn't that cute? .com. We also have a documentary of the early, early days where you can actually hear Steve's voice and see our travels and see some of the crazy progression. If you go to iTunes or Amazon and search Hope for Steve, you'll see that. Steve also paints. He paints with his wheelchair.
It's awesome.
I know. They're so cool. I love them so much. I would keep every single one if my wall wasn't already full. But his website is driveforacure.com. And am I forgetting something?
Let's see. Your paintings. Yeah.
And I also make weavings, and it's hopihippie.com. Steve gave me that.
Nice.
That was my nickname, was always Hopi Hippie to him.
That's cute. And so I definitely recommend anyone who's on Instagram to go check out Hope on Instagram. And there's links there too, where you can follow the journey. And great. Well, this was awesome. I'm so grateful.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for being willing to let me just ask you anything. And honestly, I feel like there's so much that we could talk about that I'm like, wow, I can't believe we only had an hour and a half. I'm like, oh. But just thanks for letting me in to share it with all the people who listen to this.
Absolutely. And anybody that ever wants to ask me anything, don't be afraid.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Hope, and take care.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you so much for listening. If you found something in this show that really inspired you or helped you to have a healing insight, then I would request of you to do one of the most powerful things you can do to give back to this show and to the community. And that is share the episode with a friend. Share this podcast with a friend. Just one friend, more if you wish, but even just one. Whenever you listen to an episode and it touches you, share it. That's all I ask. Thank you so much. And I will see you in the Self-Care Club. That's over at selfcareclub.net. And we will be hanging out February 13th with special guests from Birdsong Brooklyn Doulas. We will have Laura and Erica here, who were on the show a few episodes back. So go check out their show and then come and hang out with us and get to really get real with a bunch of your like-minded kinfolk in the Self-Care Club. I'll see you there.